Hello, my name is Alex. I work for Canonical. I have a pleasure to work on Lex-C project and do a lot of container stuff in the kernel, in user space. We have been working on that new stuff about AD Muppet Mount support for some file systems together with Stefan and with Christian. So today I'm going to talk about the problems that we faced when we started to actually look into the network-based file systems and how to support AD Muppet Mounts for them, because it's kind of hard sometimes. First of all, I'm not sure that everyone knows everything about that stuff, so I want to give some intro about how it works currently. And yeah, if anybody there, we were listening to our previous talk about isolated user spaces stuff. Please forget that for the next 30 minutes, because that's a new feature. But this stuff is about stable API that we have in Linux kernel since, I guess, 5.11 or something. So that's more about supporting more file systems. So we don't do this isolated user spaces stuff in here. First of all, we need to understand that we have three types of ID mappings in the kernel. First one is the caller's ID mapping, which effectively taken from the username space and from the current username space. Username space attached, you can get the pointer to username space from the struct cred, and you can get the pointer to struct cred from the task struct. Right? So if you're calling any kind of syscall in Linux kernel, you get a current task. And so can get a current username space. So we have a macro in the kernel to get that. And even if you're not doing any kind of container stuff, even if you're not using username spaces, you always invisibly using that, because you're using the default mapping, which looks like 00 in this big number, which is effectively the largest unsigned integer. And what does this mean? The first number is the user ID inside user namespace. Second number is the user ID outside of the user namespace. And effectively the length of this mapping. So this mapping is the identity mapping, which means that we effectively map 0 to 0, 1 to 1, and so forth. Next thing that we have when we are working with any kind of VFS stuff is the file systems ID mapping. File systems ID mapping is the also represented as the username space, because it's the thing that we are attaching to the super block of the file system. So when you're creating a new mount, for example, for X4 file system, you have a block device, you're creating a new mount, and if it is the first mount for this file system, yeah, not a bind mount, I mean, then the super block gets allocated, and on the super block structure, we have a field called SUserNS. And this field gets filled with the current userNS. So when you do a mount, it takes the current userNS space from your current task and puts that into the super block. And that's FL systems ID mapping, which means that if you're, let's say, inside a container with some username space and you do a mount, so your super block will get this username space effectively from your container's username space. And that's a pretty old stuff, actually, because I believe that it was from the beginning of when the username spaces were introduced many years ago. And third thing about we are talking today is the mounts ID mapping. Mounts ID mapping is the concept a little bit more high level, because instead of being attached to the super block, we have the mount, we have the ID mappings attached to the mount. So it means that you can, for example, create X4 file system on top of some block device, then do a bind mount, and you can do this bind mount with some ID mapping attached to it. And once you get any kind of I/O through this ID mapped mount, you will get some extra UIDJID translation layer inside the VFS, inside the generic VFS code, and then this all of that goes through the file system ID mapping, and then all of that gets written to the disk. So that's how it works. So important to mention that all the time when you're interacting with the kernel from the user space, and if you use any kind of syscalls like start, get UID, get soc opt, for instance, with the option soc peer cred, which allows you to get the PID and UID, GID of the peer socket, you will get these values mapped in accordance with your current username space. So the caller's ID mapping always get always taken into account everywhere in the kernel. And for example, if you that's effectively all the examples, and also we have the same in procpeat status file and all that stuff. So let's take a look what happens when you, for example, take the getuid syscall, which is the probably the simplest one. Inside the kernel, we have a few helpers to convert between the user space user ID that we can get, that we can work with inside the username space, and with the internal representation of user ID inside the kernel. Because inside the kernel, we have two types, UIDT and KUIDT. UIDT is the user space one, effectively, because it's just a 32-bit thing. And KUIDT is also a 32-bit thing. It's the same in size. It's just, usually they contain the same value, but KUIDT is the value that represents the user ID always in the initial username space, which means that, for example, if you are inside the container with username space, you have the, let's say, user ID inside the container 0, and if you have the corresponding user ID on the host, let's say 1,000, then KUID will have the value 1,000, always. But once you call the getuid syscall from the context of the process of the task that runs inside the container, inside this username space, this function called from KUID mount will be called. And the first argument of this function is the current username space, which effectively the something that represents the UID mapping. And second argument is the current UID, which will be the KUIDT value, which is equal to 1,000. And this function called from KUID mount will try to effectively remap this host visible value 1,000 to the appropriate value inside this specific username space. It will be 0 in our case, because as I have explained, in this case, let's say we have like mapping of 0 inside the container to 1,000 on the host, and so you will get the 0 finally, yeah? And this function has a pair function called from KUID, and the difference between these two functions is that from KUID is like more the internal one. If we fail to represent the internal KUID in terms of some username space UID range, the from KUID function returns minus 1, which means that something terribly wrong. We can't really represent that ID inside this username space, which is possible. For example, if you have the username space with the that maps only like 1,000 to 0, and if you have the user ID, let's say 2,000 on the host, you can't really represent that with any reasonable value inside, right? And if you call the from KUID, it will return minus 1. But function from KUID mount, it does the trick. If the from KUID returns minus 1, it takes the overflow UID and returns that. That explains why we have this interesting stuff with, like, if you have the if you try to access the, for example, the container file system from the host, or that has another ID mapping, and you will see this strange nobody user. That's because this function is used everywhere, because we can't really give the user space with this minus one. The user space always expects us to give the normal user ID, reasonable user ID. And also we have a helper called make KUID, which effectively does the opposite thing. It takes the user space UID and creates the internal representation of it for the kernel. The same, we need to plug the current username space, current ID mapping to this helper and give the user space value. And that's what happens inside the set UID syscall. If you plug the, let's say, value 0, let's say 1 inside the username space to that syscall, inside the container it will go like make KUID current username space 1. It will go to the UID map and will try to find that, okay, this 1 is for what? And if it fails to do that, then okay, we get again val. And so to set UID will not allow us to set this UID because it's not mapped. But if you have a mapping like 0, 1,000, 2, which means that you have mapped 0 and 1, then this succeeds because the NK UID for that thing will be 1,001 on the kernel. And everywhere it will be represented like that, but once you until you do the get UID or something like that. For file systems, what we have for file systems? For file systems, we have, it's about superblock ID mapping, right? We have two important helpers. One helper effectively takes the inode and tries to get the user space visible UID, so the normal UID. This function called iUIDRead, but in fact, it called on the write path. There is no mistake, that's perfectly fine, because we are reading the iUID value from the inode. That's why it read, because we read this value from inode. But of course, it's called on the write path, because when the file system driver wants to write the UID on disk, or let's say send it over the wire in network file systems like Ceph, we need to call this to get properly mapped, remapped user ID that we can then send over the wire, put on the disk, and forget. And we have a second helper called the iUIDWrite, which does the opposite. It takes the inode, it takes the user space visible normal classical UID that we supposed to work with, and does the same as we have seen in the set UID syscall. It takes calls the helper called makeKUID, but instead of taking the current username space, it takes the username space from superblock. Right, and second argument is the value. So let's say if you create the file on the file system at first from the user ID like 1, so you will get that. Like it will take the value 1 and plug in there, and so this KUID will be written into the inode iUID field. And finally, we are getting to the point when we can take a look on the whole picture, like how it works together with the mounts ID mapping. Okay, imagine that we have the caller UID 1000, and this caller wants to create the file on the ID mapped mount, and we have these three ID mappings in place. We have the caller's ID mapping, which is okay, which is something that we have been discussing right now. We have file system ID mapping, which is in this specific example, which is the identity ID mapping that does the zero maps 0 to 0, 1 to 1, 2 to 2, and so on. And we have a new thing, mounts ID mapping, which maps effectively 0 to 10,000 and has the length 10,000. So we have like 10,000 UIDs mapped with this shift. So the second thing is effectively the shift value. So the 0 goes to 10,000, 1 goes to 10,001, and so on. And what will happen in the kernel in this case once we try to create the file? First of all, we will create the internal representation for the user ID 1000, which will be 11,000, right? Small remark is that effectively in the kernel, to be honest, we all the time work only with this KUID thing. So it means that technically, when you're calling the file system syscalls, like let's say open with OCreate flag, the first step is not going to happen because we already have these values on the struct cred. But it's easier to think about it like that just to understand how much different mappings we have in this place, right? And second thing is that we need to apply this new concept, mount ID mapping, right? We need to take the mount ID mapping and perform effectively the reverse operation. We call the from KUID, we take the value that we've got from the caller's ID mapping, and then we do this mapping in accordance with this with this definition that we have. In this case, we are mapping the KUID 11,000 remap it, and what we get 1,000, right? Which is obvious. And then, once we want to create the file on the disk, we need to get the IUIDT back, right? So we need to go through the file systems ID mapping, which is attached to the super block, to get the UID that will be written on the disk. And so in our case, fortunately, we have the identity file systems ID mapping, which means that, okay, we have user ID 1000, it goes to 1000, that's all. But let's think about another example. If we have the, for example, mapping like U0, K1000, in this case, we can remap that value, right? Because if it goes like U0, K1000, we fail because this U1000 is not in the range of this mapping. But for the second one, U1000, K0, we can remap because the corresponding user ID will be 0. But in first place, we can't. And what happens if the VFS generic code realizes that it cannot remap the value? It will give you the E overflow error. So that's the reason why you can get E overflow error when you're working with ID mapped mounts. And not only. Even if you're not using ID mapped mounts, if you're using just normal mounts, but you're trying to, for example, to write to this mount from the another user namespace with another caller ID mapping, which is incompatible in terms of ranges of user IDs with this mount file systems ID mapping, you can get this overflow error. So that's the really complicated behavior, but that's how it works. And we have no alternatives, effectively, right? So you can create ID mapped mounts using these effectively two options. We already have new feature that allows you to use the classical Linux mount utility to create ID mapped mount, but in most distros I don't think that it actually works right now because it's too recent. It's like 1 year or something like that. So I'm always using the Christian's utility to create ID mapped mounts. And internally, it just uses the syscall called mount setutter to set the ID mapping on the mount. And so you can, you always need to specify this attribute with the username space file descriptor. So we're always getting the IUID mappings and GUID mappings from the username space because username space, we have the way to actually set user ID mappings and GUID mappings to the username space from user space using the proc files, right? That's the reason. So currently we have support for all of these file systems, but if you take a look on the list closer, you will notice that most of them are local ones, so it's like the X4, BetterFS, XFS, and so on. And recently we have been working with Christian and Stefan on the Ceph support. Christian did the major work a few years ago, created the first implementation of that, but unfortunately it got lost in discussions and it wasn't merged, so I asked the permission to continue work on that because it was kind of important for our containers applications. And I get some rebase stuff, and also we decided to use a little bit another approach to make it work. I will explain that a little bit later. So starting from 6.7, you can use the ID map mounts with CephFS. And yeah, that's CephFS is the only network file system in this list. How to port the file system? The very naive way to do that is to go through the file systems code, find all the places where we have like nope MNT ID map, which means that this file system ID mapping is not defined, so there is no ID mapping. Replace it with the ID map identifier, which is passed almost to all the VFS API functions from the generic VFS code. And then also replace the current FS UID, which gives you the K UID from the current user, and with the mapped FS UID, which does the same but takes into account the ID mapping, and also raise the FS alloyed map flag on the file system's definition. But no, that's not that simple, because you need to be really, really careful with that stuff. Otherwise, you can really break things and or even open to some vulnerabilities or something like that. So the reason for that is that, I would suggest that if you want to try porting some file system to support ID mappings, especially the network one, you need to go through the code of ext4 as a really, really good example, because ext4 file system is like very complex one. It has many features. For example, you can do the overlay FS on top of and use the ext4 as a one of the layers for overlay FS. And for example, the rename callback on the ext4 supports really interesting rename mode called rename whiteout, which effectively, when you rename the file, usually it disappears on the previous place and appears on the new place, right? But in this case, on the old place where a file supposed to disappear, it creates the so-called whiteout thing. So this is effectively the character device with the major and minor numbers zero. And that mode is enabled only when you call the rename from the overlay FS. And I guess that only for that reason, this rename callback and VFS takes the ID mapping as an argument, because in all the other file systems where we have no support for that, we can't really use this ID mapping in any case, because we don't need one. Also, you need to pay attention in the getAtter, because getAtter, what it does, it's effectively what is getting called in the file system driver when you call the stat syscall, because getAtter reads the attributes, fills the kAtter structure in the kernel with all the data like size, like user ID, JID stuff, and all that. And you will definitely need to take ID mapping into account in this place to get proper user IDs and JIDs reported to the user space, right? Also, there is a permission callback, which effectively does all the permission checking Unix-like in the kernel. So you need to also properly pass the ID mapping in there. If the file system that you want to convert uses the generic permission helper, then you just need to pass the ID mapping, check that everything really works, and that's pretty much all. But sometimes it's not the case, because some file systems, we'll see that later, use really, really weird machinery to check the permissions. And also get ACL stuff, and that's pretty much all for read code pass. But for write pass, the most important pieces is obviously the places where we're creating the new inodes, right? So that's the mknode, symlink, mkdir, atomic open, and create. So we need to take ID mapping into account in all of these places, because we actually write the UIDs and JIDs, so that's it. And setAtter, which is getting code from, for example, chown syscall, right? So you need to, as the chown syscall takes the user IDs and JIDs from the user space, you need to properly remap them and write to the attributes. So that's... So for local file systems, as I said, you really need to take the ext4 or better FS or something, just carefully read the code, be absolutely sure that you understand how it works, and then go for the file system that you want to support. Which problems we can have, and we really have? First of all, some file systems, especially network ones, they do the permission checking on the server side, which is really bad, because what we want is to ID map it mounts is the local feature of Linux kernel. We don't want to tell the file system's remote server to be aware about that we have this crazy, interesting Linux-specific stuff, because the theoretically user may be from another operating system, right? So if we want to... If the file system does some UID, JID-based permission checks on the server side, it means that we need to extend the on-wire protocol, pass all of these ID map stuff over the network, write some logic in there, so that's not work usually. And effectively for a fuse file system, which is not a network one, but it almost the same as network ones, right? Because you have the user space daemon, you have the kernel. Kernel is effectively the client, and user space daemon is effectively the file system, and the client, the kernel just takes the information from syscall, does something with that information, produces the request, send it over the fuse device, and the user space read that. And so if he wants to do all the permission checks on the user space side, and if you want to support ID mapped mounts, we need to pass these ID mappings over the, so we need to extend the protocol that we use between the user space and kernel space for fuse, right? Also, some file systems, it's also about fuse effectively. Some file systems can do, some allow you to completely disable the standard permission hook permissions. So effectively implemented almost like an empty thing that just allows everything. And then do all the permission checks on the level of the inode operations. And the problem is that I can remember that I have seen that in the, while I was working on Ceph, is that in Ceph, it's possible to set the configuration based on the path to the file and specify the user IDs and JIDs that actually allowed to read this subdirectory. It means that you have the combination of permissions checking on the Linux kernel side, then you have some permission checking on the kernel side, on the server side, I'm sorry, which is the remote server with another kernel, which does not know anything about this stuff, right? And they do checks almost everywhere, even for lookup. And why it's bad for lookup? First of all, because lookup inode operation does not have ID map argument. And it's not obvious why it doesn't have, but the reason for that is that the usually lookup operation is getting called from the slow lookup path in the kernel, right? If you have the pre-cached entries for some paths, then we won't go to this lookup callback. Instead, we'll just take the entry. And it means that if you have the permission checks inside the lookup, then everything will depend on that if you have the entry cached, or if you have this entry already or not. So if you have not, then you go to the lookup, then you do the permission checks. If you have this entry cached already for some reason, for example, if this entry was accessed from another mount with another user, then these permission checks won't happen, really. That's bad, right? That's why we want to have the all the checks in one place, ideally, for this stuff. And, of course, some of you can say that, okay, in this case, we can do some permission checks in the revalidate helper, which is always getting called, yeah, to revalidate, but not, because we don't want to do that, I guess. And also, third case that I've almost forgotten about is that some file systems has the local feature really, really close ideologically to what we have in Linux that does some UID, JID mappings on the level of the file system itself. And that's also a problem because I personally don't understand how to combine all of that together to make it work properly. In Ceph case, what I have found is that we have the combination effectively of the classical permission checks and the server side checks. Speaking honestly, we decided to forget about that because we just decided that if someone uses the ID mapped mounts, we clearly say that, okay, you don't want to use the server side permission checks in this case. Just disable that. Just trust the kernel. Just trust the client because Ceph really trusts the client. If you have the key to interact with the MDS server, you can do anything. So there is no real reason to do some additional checks because you can, if you have the user ID checks on the server side and if you have a client, this client can give you any UID, right? So it makes no sense to check that because this information is not like trustworthy. So So in Ceph case, we have this lookup problem, which is okay because it's only actual for this case when you have some additional setup, some additional configuration. And the third one is that for some reason, most I guess it's just historically, is that Ceph uses current FS UID everywhere to get the current user ID. To get the current user ID. But what we want usually, to take the credential structure from the file, because when you open, when you are opening the file descriptor, the credential structure from your current task gets saved, gets stashed to the struct file structure. And then we expect that if you do, for example, the write syscall or read syscall on this file descriptor, then everything, all the permission checks will be done in the relevant to this credential structure that we have on the file. You may ask me why it's so important. It's important if you want to pass the file descriptor over the Unix socket, or if you, for example, opening the file descriptor while you are privileged, but then you do some capabilities drop things or set UID or something, and you lose your privileges effectively, and so that can be a problem. But I was, to be honest, I decided not to send fixes for that because I don't want to break any real user space application. I don't know, maybe someone relies on that. So that's technically not ideally correct, but we'll see. I effectively covered that. Yeah, what we decided to do, we just ignored these problems with the server-side permission checks because we can't really do anything with that, and we were asked by the CephFS folks, CephFS maintainers. Thanks to them for help, for reviews, to Venki Shankar, to Subali, for helping with that because they were reviewing that stuff, especially the user space one, because I was forced to extend the on-wire CephFS protocol and add some extra UID and JID fields for the inode creation operations. And of course, all of that was done in the backward forward anyhow compatible way, not to break anything. And what we are doing right now, we are currently working on Fuse. I have already sent a series of patches that enables support for Fuse. Unfortunately, only for the mode when we have the default permission set, because as I said, if you have the Fuse mount without this flag called default permissions, then effectively the permission callback is almost empty. It just allows everything. And in this case, Fuse file system expects that the user space will do all the permission checks in the user space, which is a problem because we can't handle that properly. And also, obviously, Fuse protocol that between the user space and kernel space was extended to send these UIDs and JIDs over the wire, let's say. Also, in addition to this series, I wanted to be absolutely sure that this really works properly, so I have taken the three not random file systems. Overlay FS Fuse just as a good and relatively simple example for this specific case. It's not simple at all. Overlay FS Fuse, CephFS Fuse, because I was already familiar with Fuse a little bit while I was working and GlusterFS, which is the new one. For GlusterFS, it's not an ideal implementation because I unexpectedly found that GlusterFS also likes to do all the permission checks by default in the user space. And so that's a bit painful, but I found some special configuration option that allows to disable that and enable the default permission thing for that file system, and it allows us to make it work. So to do, in our plan to go further with the Fuse series to make it fully tested, covered, and be absolutely sure that everything is fine, Then we want to convert the 9PFS and Virtua.UFS, which can be useful if you do some nesting stuff, like virtual machine with some shared directories from the host and then the container inside, for example, which is not a rare case. And yeah, that's all. Questions?
Hello, thank you for your talk. Is there any caveats with ID mappings and interaction with LSMs? So like if you're doing some checks in LSMs, like what kind of UID do you get there? Because I was confused.
That's a good question, to be honest, because you know, like all of these ID mapped mounts works is done by Christian, thanks to him, because he did all of these great API in the kernel, all of this preparation stuff. I mean that our isolated user in space work and how we managed to make it work with the file systems became so small in terms of lines of code that were modified just because Christian did all of this crazily complex hard stuff in the kernel a few years ago, because he effectively provided us with the two functions in the kernel that we can patch easily, relatively easily, and so we get the ID mappings supported for some like new crazy case, right? And I don't know much about LSMs, so I guess that it should be integrated already.
So when I did the original work, I went through all of the LSMs, and so for example, LSMs like SA Linux don't fuck with UIDs and GIDs. They don't care about this at all. So most of these LSM functions don't get past the path or UID and GID value at all. The only hooks are relevant, like security file open and so on. And then it's mostly Tomoyo and possibly some AppArmor stuff. And they are all patched to take the ID mapping into account. Although one caveat is I once tried to do some additional fixes inside of Tomoyo itself because it kind of does weird stuff, but the maintainer said, no, we don't care.
I mostly care about like BPF LSM because the hook doesn't get the UID, but like you can like extract it from some...
Oh yeah, they are aware of that. I talk to them, so yeah. Well, for example, if you do a BPF LSM and in hooks like security file open, you get the relevant ID mapping provided. And in other hooks where you only have the inode, yeah, then you don't have access. But that's also, for example, not feasible. Like, no, there is no security hook in lookup, but there is certainly locations where we have security hooks where you, for example, in the Dentry cache, where you don't have any of that information available, and it's impossible to make that work. Like you mentioned the lookup stuff. The lookup stuff itself, like it was two reasons why we didn't do it this way. First of all, because in lookup you initialize an inode, and that always needs to be take the global UID and GID into account, the one that you see everywhere. Otherwise, you end up with inode aliases in a way, because you know, if you can't cache an inode per mount. That's the one thing. And the other thing, that lookup is called deep from within the Dentry cache, which would have meant then suddenly you would have like have to pass mount information more or less, because it's mount information through the Dentry cache. It doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. Also, L would have killed me. But I mean, that's another thing why in these locations we don't want to have this. But for example, BVF LSMs, if they need that sort of information in specific hooks and is doable, then we can easily extend the hooks. Like, I don't have a problem with this, like sort of more of a LSM question if they're ready to do this. I think for most LSMs hooks, it simply hasn't been done because the LSMs that implemented this specific hook didn't want this information, so it didn't make sense to provide it. If you have an LSM that wants this information, it's easy to extend it.
Always tricky when you provide a policy from user space to use a kernel ID. Yeah, you mentioned NFS real quick. How does it work with NFS? Since, if I remember correctly, there's an upcall through the Linux keyring, right? So do you get the translated